Now, we've just caught David Rubik's literally on his way out of Queen's Park, and he just performed. And I understand, David, that you just got into Brisbane.
Yeah, just yesterday, and played at Ahimsa House last night, and heading off to Lismore now, and then Mullaney on Tuesday.
And what have you been doing before you got to Brisbane?
I was in Victoria and ACT and New South Wales and Tasmania. And, after Queensland, I'm heading back to Sydney and then to New Zealand for a tour there.
So you've been touring quite a lot, because it wasn't that long since you've been in Brisbane.
It's true. I was here just 7 months ago, I guess, in December. Well, actually, in early January for the Woodford Festival. So, yeah, I was here quite recently, but I thought I'd come back because I like it here. And I met really wonderful people that I wanted to see again. And there seemed to be enough interest from folks to at least organize a half-decent tour. And then it turned out to be a really great tour with, like, just loads of great gigs with loads of good crowds. And it's just been fantastic. So I don't know if I'll come back here twice a year generally, but I figured I could at least do it, you know, this time. And probably it'll turn into more of a once a year kind of thing in the future. Seems to be about how often you can tour somewhere and you know, feel like, you know, people feel like, oh, he hasn't been here for a while, let's go to the show, rather than people feeling like, well, you know, he was just here, so maybe I'll skip this one, go to the next one. You know, that's you don't want that. You don't want to go too often to where people are thinking that way, you know.
And you're based in America usually? Where are you from?
Yeah, when I'm not on tour, I'm in Portland, Oregon. I have an apartment in Portland, Oregon, and my little daughter there, and take her on tour a lot with me, and I abandoned her regularly as well and tour without her. And but yeah, that's where I live.
Portland's a fairly radical place. That I know someone from the indie media. Are you, well, I guess you are into independent media forms?
Oh yeah, and I think Portland's probably fair to say that Portland's indie media is probably the most active indie media in the U.S. outside of New York City, from what I've seen. And it's certainly, I mean, indie media has certainly been a fantastic thing that really was going strong for the time that the global justice movement was really going strong in the U.S., like 99 to 2003 or so, and it's kind of tapered off since then, but it's definitely still active in Portland. And Portland is probably, it's not why I moved there, but I think it's probably fair to say it's the hippest city in the country. I mean, there are neighborhoods where if you don't have at least 9 facial piercings, you're kind of out of place, you know. It's really, like, seems to be where everybody is going. If they have too many, you know, tattoos on their forehead to get along in Michigan, then, you know, they go to Portland where they can fit in, you know.
Now, we've sort of heard that you are touring quite a bit at the moment. It sounds like you've spent a bit of time in Australia. At least you've got around a fair bit, and then to New Zealand. So do you actually get to spend much time in Portland?
Yeah, I mean, I took a year off from, like, touring. I mean, I barely toured at all for a year to raise my daughter when she was 2. But then once she turned 3, I started hitting the road a lot more because she was old enough to travel. And by then she was, well, she's always been good with traveling, but she was old enough to sort of, She was weaned, basically. I could take her on the road without her, you know, wanting the booby. So I've been traveling a lot more since then. I guess I spend a bit more than half the time on the road, but I'm in Portland quite a bit, too.
What's your view on Obama? I know that there was a lot of excitement about Obama when he was becoming president, and musicians like Michael Franti got behind him in the campaign. But what's your opinion on him?
Well, I mean, generally, I think, you know, I mean, for people like Michael Franti to get behind him, I think is what it's about more than anything is just the attitude that, you know, anybody but the Republicans is preferable, you know, and I think that's fairly obviously the case. But the Democratic Party is really rotten to the core. And although there are more good Democrats than there are good Republicans in terms of, you know, there's probably fair to say several dozen Democrats in the Congress who are good progressive people, and certainly most people that vote Democrat are progressive, as opposed to the leadership of the party, which is really pro-capitalist and pro-war. But Obama, I mean, whether, you know, I think it's really more about, like, I mean, who knows, you know, unless you can get in the guy's head, I mean, you can't know what his real intentions are, and you can, you know, whether people are right. I mean, every time there's a Democrat in the White House, there's always people who are like, well, he really is a good guy, and he really wants to do the right things, and he's just sending 25,000 more troops to Afghanistan because he feels like he has to do that in order to have any credibility or whatever. So that people always make up excuses for politicians who do the wrong thing, if they like them. And in the end, I think, basically, it doesn't really matter whether he's has good intentions or not. What matters is that that if he has good intentions, they will only be able to be manifested if there's a serious mass movement on the streets to support the manifesting of those good intentions. You know, because he has so much pressure coming from the right, and there's no question about that. And unless there's pressure coming from the left, even if he wants to do the right thing, he doesn't have the political capital to do the right thing. There needs to be people on the streets for any politician to do the right thing, whether they want to or not.
And we're here today at the Hiroshima Day rally, and you just sung a few songs. Can you tell me your thoughts on today's rally?
I think it's, I mean, of course, it's a small rally in here in downtown Brisbane, but I think, you know, there's so many places in the world, and Australia and North America and wherever, where they're not even having any kind of a gathering to mark this day, and other places, of course, like Nagasaki right now, there's tens of thousands of people marking today, and a couple days ago in Hiroshima, there were tens of thousands probably there marking the day, as there are every year, as there have been every year since 1950 or so. And I think it's really important, no matter how many people turn out to mark this day. It's these 2 days are, you know, represent the most horrific acts mankind has ever committed against other humans. And I guess I say mankind with some self-consciousness, because it was men who dropped the bomb and men who designed the bomb. But it's you know, that it needs to be remembered that it's possible for humans to do such horrific things to each other. And I think it needs to be, the connection obviously needs to be made, that the United States, while it has not dropped a nuclear bomb on any country since Nagasaki, it has destroyed many, many cities and killed millions of women and children and men with horrific bombs, you know, all over Asia. You know, since 1945, the United States has never learned from the nuclear age, and has never stopped being at war with Asia, as it has been really since, you could say, 1898. You know, you could pick a date earlier than that, but I think really it's a good date if you're going to pick one. It's been at war with Asia ever since.
I walked outside one day and a man was standing there. He had a great big beard and lots of hair. He said, "Won't you come down to the shore and join my jolly crew? We'll wander around the world beneath the skies of blue. We'll sail upon the seven seas, travel near and far. Take from the rich and give to the poor and say har, 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 har." We'll go out on the ocean, and when the coast is clear, we'll eat birthday cake each day of the year. We'll land on a little island, then we'll form a choir, blow on whistles and kazoos, and dance around a fire. We'll sail upon the seven seas, travel near and far. Take from the rich and give to the poor and say har, 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 har.
You were just telling us, you were just speaking about how important it is for people to get out on the street, and I guess that's the kind of thing that you sing about and what you hope to give to your audience when you travel around Australia or New Zealand or wherever in the world.
Yeah, I hope to do my little part as a songwriter to encourage people to keep on struggling and to be out in the street and to also, you know, enjoy life and enjoy music. I mean, hopefully it's they're enjoying the experience of the concerts as well as maybe, you know, feeling, you know, lots of different emotions. I mean, I think, you know, life is all about, it's not all about, you know, being happy. It's all about feeling and thinking. And feeling and thinking, you know, lots of different kinds of feeling and thinking is a real positive thing for people to do and a positive experience, even if it's a you know, a sad song or, you know, also being part of the movement for me and for other people who come to my shows and who are part of the progressive movement in one way or another. It's it is a overwhelmingly positive experience for a lot of people because, you know, in the end, with all the internal bickering and you know, with all the sort of, you know, desire for the movement to be bigger than it is, in the end, there's a lot of really, really good people who are involved with the movement, whether they're, you know, involved with, you know, labor or environmental or anti-war or organizing, whether they're anarchists or socialists or whatever. They're just a heck of a lot of really good people, and it's really both a important but also a therapeutic thing for people to be around each other when we're involved with these kinds of struggles. It's you know, what's life all about? You know, I mean, doing something useful, spending time with wonderful people, you can do all that and be, you know, on the left. And that's the message I try to bring to people, you know, to be a little bit of a cheerleader for the left and try to help people keep going in one way or another, and also to, you know, also to sort of, and to some extent, initiate the uninitiated or educate people about things that they may never have heard about or read about. Or
this is how it started. It's not hard to understand. From coast to coast, they're lying at a CEO's command. From nationalist public radio, CNN and NBC. Big Brother spewing propaganda from the disinformation ministry. They say the economy is booming. We hear the homeless beggars' cries. They say we help poor countries. We see bombs falling from the skies. Reality doesn't exist, they're trying to say. But some of us decided there is another way. Seize the airwaves, seize the time. 'Cause lying to the people is the real crime. When it's all owned by corporations and theirs is the only word, we will seize the airwaves, speak freely and be heard. We will seize the airwaves, speak freely and be heard.
What hope do you have for the future of civilization? Do you think governments are listening to people in the streets? Or do you think that activists need to take it a step further and become a bit more militant in their opposition?
I think militancy is very important as long as you have a large section of the population supporting you, and otherwise militancy is counterproductive. So it really depends on the circumstances. But I think there's no question that we need a bigger movement, and it's very complicated to say, you know, how do we build a movement like that. Partly it's a matter of just doing what we're doing and maintaining infrastructure of various sorts, indie media, you know, having shows on community radio, having centers like the Resistance Center, or, you know, info shops, and just having having ways for people to plug in and join the movement in whatever ways they can, and to always bear in mind that even though we are small, and even though it feels like, and the government would certainly have us believe, any government would have us believe that they're fully in control and that everybody supports them, the reality is that they always know, those in power always know, that they are basically, fundamentally, what they do is unpopular, and what they need is to confuse the people into thinking that they're doing something other than what they're doing, and that they are always in fear of the possibility of losing the consent of the governed. And they know that as soon as they lose the consent of the governed, they are in a very dangerous situation, and then there's a dual power situation, and then there's the possibility for real dramatic change to happen that is out of the control of the government. They know that. It happens regularly in countries all over the world. It happened here in Australia, certainly after the Eureka stockade and at other points. And it can happen again, and they're always in fear of that possibility. And mass movements can grow, and they can grow better and faster when there is, at times like these, dark times like these, that there is our people out there, at least, you know, maintaining an infrastructure, maintaining these ideas, keeping these ideas out there, putting out publications, websites, you know, having vigils even if they're small. It's all very important. But yeah, sure, when a mass movement grows, once it's big, then that's the opportunity for the activist community out there to really step into high gear, to really, you know, keep on top of things, raise money, get everybody's email, network, you know, use every gathering as an opportunity to build the movement and not think, oh, well, this is great, there's a movement happening, you know, but to actually really actively, you know, go into high gear at that point and really try to network and build the movement and bring it to places that are as militant as possible while still having popular support.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much for taking time today. We'll let you go on your way now.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
It can happen in a moment. Sometimes it does when what could be is and what shouldn't be was. There are times when you gotta stand steady. There are other times when you gotta be ready. The window can open, it seems so wide, but you can never tell when it's gonna slam shut. One day you're a target on the firing ranges, the next day all of a sudden everything changes.
When it all, when it all, when it all.